Chapter 8, Text 16. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartinojuna mamupecha tukunteya punarjanma navidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Purport. All kinds of yogis, karma, jnana, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. Those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subjected to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets such as Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, and Indraloka fall down to earth. The practice of sacrifice called Panchagni Vidya, recommended in the Chandogya Upanishad, enables one to achieve Brahmaloka. But if, on Brahmaloka, one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. Those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets, and at the time of universal devastation are transferred to the eternal spiritual kingdom. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, quotes this verse. Brahmana sahate sarvehi samprapte patisanchare patisyante kritatmano pavishanti paramparam. When there is devastation of this material universe, Brahma and his devotees, who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness, are all transferred to the spiritual universe and to specific spiritual planets according to their desires. Text 17. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyan brahmano vidu ratrim yuga sahasrantam teho ratra vidojana. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. Purport. The duration of the material universe is limited. It is manifested in cycles of kalpas. A kalpa is a day of Brahma, and one day of Brahma consists of 1,000 cycles of 4 yugas or ages, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. The age of Satya is characterized by virtue, wisdom, and religion, there being practically no ignorance and vice. And the yuga lasts 1,728,000 years. In the Treta Yuga, vice is introduced, and this yuga lasts 1,296,000 years. In the Dwapara Yuga, there is an even greater decline in virtue and religion, vice increasing, and this yuga lasts 864,000 years. And finally, in Kali Yuga, the yuga we have now been experiencing over the past 5,000 years, there is an abundance of strife, ignorance, irreligion, and vice, true virtue being practically non-existent. And this yuga lasts 432,000 years. In Kali Yuga, vice increases to such a point that at the termination of the yuga, the Supreme Lord himself appears as the Kalki avatar, vanquishes the demons, saves his devotees, and commences another Satya Yuga. Then the process is set rolling again. These 4 yugas, rotating 1,000 times, comprise one day of Brahma, and the same number comprise one night. Brahma lives 100 of such years and then dies. These 100 years, by earth calculations, total to 311 trillion and 40 billion earth years. By these calculations, the life of Brahma seems fantastic and interminable. But from the viewpoint of eternity, it is as brief as a lightning flash. In the causal ocean, there are innumerable Brahmas rising and disappearing like bubbles in the Atlantic. Brahma and his creation are all part of the material universe, and therefore they are in constant flux. In the material universe, not even Brahma is free from the process of birth, old age, disease, and death. Brahma, however, is directly engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord in the management of this universe. Therefore, he at once attains liberation. Elevated sannyasis are promoted to Brahma's particular planet, Brahmaloka, which is the highest planet in the material universe and which survives all the heavenly planets in the upper strata of the planetary system. But in due course, Brahma and all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka are subject to death, according to the law of material nature. Text 18. Avyakta duktaya sarva pabhavanti haragami ratyagami praliyanti chatraiva avyakta sangaki. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. And thereafter, when the night falls, they are merged into the unmanifest again. Text 19. Bhuta grama sahevayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratyagame vashakpata pabhavatya haragame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Purport. The less intelligent who try to remain within this material world may be elevated to higher planets and then again must come down to this planet Earth. During the daytime of Brahma, they can exhibit their activities on higher and lower planets within this material world. But at the coming of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. In the day, they receive various bodies for material activities. And at night, they no longer have bodies but remain compact in the body of Vishnu. Then again, they are manifest at the arrival of Brahma's day, bhutva bhutva paliyate. During the day, they become manifest, and at night, they are annihilated again. Ultimately, when Brahma's life is finished, they are all annihilated and remain unmanifest for millions and millions of years. And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifest. In this way, they are captivated by the spell of the material world. But those intelligent persons who take to Krishna consciousness use the human life fully in the devotional service of the Lord, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thus they transfer themselves, even in this life, to the spiritual planet of Krishna and become eternally blissful there, not being subject to such rebirths. Text 20. Parastasmattu bhavanyoho vyakto vyaktat sanatanaho yaksa sarveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu navinasyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. Purport. Krishna's superior spiritual energy is transcendental and eternal. It is beyond all the changes of material nature, which is manifest and annihilated during the days and nights of Brahma. Krishna's superior energy is completely opposite in quality to material nature. Superior and inferior nature are explained in the seventh chapter. Text 21. Avyakto kshada ityuktas tamahu paramangatim yang prapina nivartante tadndhama paramang mama. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. Purport. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in the Brahma Samhita as Chintamani Dham, a place where all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees, called desire trees, that supply any type of eatable upon demand. And there are cows, known as Surabhi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis, and he is called Govinda, the primal Lord and the cause of all causes. The Lord is accustomed to blow his flute, Venum Quanantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like the lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of clouds. He is so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and a peacock feather in his hair. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Samhita. Vedic literatures, Katha Upanishad 1.3.11, state that there is nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that that abode is the ultimate destination. Purushanna param kinchit sakashta padamagati. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are non-different, being of the same quality. On this earth, Vrindavan, 90 miles southeast of Delhi, is a replica of that supreme Goloka Vrindavan located in the spiritual sky. When Krishna descended on this earth, he sported on that particular tract of land known as Vrindavan, comprising about 84 square miles in the district of Mathura, India. Text 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. Purport. It is here clearly stated that the supreme destination, from which there is no return, is the abode of Krishna, the Supreme Person. The Brahma Samhita describes this supreme abode as Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, a place where everything is full of spiritual bliss. All the variegatedness manifest there is of the quality of spiritual bliss. Nothing there is material. That variegatedness is expanded as the spiritual expansion of the Supreme Godhead himself, for the manifestation there is totally of the spiritual energy, as explained in Chapter 7. As far as this material world is concerned, although the Lord is always in his supreme abode, he is nonetheless all-pervading by his material energy. So by his spiritual and material energies, he is present everywhere, both in the material and in the spiritual universes. Yasyantakstani means that everything is sustained within him, within either his spiritual or material energy. The Lord is all-pervading by these two energies. To enter Krishna's supreme abode or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets is possible only by bhakti, devotional service, as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktya. No other process can help one attain that supreme abode. The Vedas, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 3.2, also describe the supreme abode and the supreme personality of Godhead. Eko Vashi Sarvaga Krishna. In that abode, there is only one supreme personality of Godhead, whose name is Krishna. He is the supreme merciful deity, and although situated there as one, he has expanded himself into millions and millions of plenary expansions. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree standing still, yet bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers, and changing leaves. The plenary expansions of the Lord who preside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known by a variety of names: Purushottama, Trivikram, Keshava, Madhava, Aniruddha, Rishikesh, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Sridhar, Vasudev, Damodar, Janardhan, Narayan, Vamana, Padmanabha, etc. The Brahma Samhita 5.37 also confirms that although the Lord is always in the supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is all-pervading, so that everything is going on nicely. Goloka eva nivasatta kilatma bhuta. As stated in the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.8, Padasya Shakti Vividhai Vashuyate Svabhaviki Gyanabalak Kriyacha. His energies are so expansive that they systematically conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a flaw, although the Supreme Lord is far, far away. Text 23. Yatra kale tvanavrittim avrittim chaiva yoginaho payata yantitam kalam pakshyami bhadatarshava. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Purport. The unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are totally surrendered souls, do not care when they leave their bodies or by what method. They leave everything in Krishna's hands and so easily and happily return to Godhead. But those who are not unalloyed devotees and who depend instead on such methods of spiritual realization as karma yoga, jnana yoga, and hatha yoga, must leave the body at a suitable time and thereby be assured whether or not they will return to the world of birth and death. If the yogi is perfect, he can select the time and situation for leaving this material world. But if he is not so expert, his success depends on his accidentally passing away at a certain suitable time. The suitable times at which one passes away and does not come back are explained by the Lord in the next verse. According to Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushan, the Sanskrit word kala used herein refers to the presiding deity of time. Text 24. Agnir jyotir ahak shukla shanmasa uttarayanam tatra prayata gacchanti brahma brahma vidojana. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery god in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. Purport. When fire, light, day, and the fortnight of the moon are mentioned, it is to be understood that over all of them there are various presiding deities who make arrangements for the passage of the soul. At the time of death, the mind carries one on the path of a new life. If one leaves the body at the time designated above, either accidentally or by arrangement, it is possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahmajyoti. Mystics who are advanced in yoga practice can arrange the time and place to leave the body. Others have no control. If by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they will not return to the cycle of birth and death. But otherwise, there is every possibility that they will have to return. However, for the pure devotee in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear of returning, whether he leaves the body at an auspicious or inauspicious moment, by accident or arrangement. Text 25. Dumo ratri stata krishna shanmasa rakshinahinam tatra chandrama sangjoti yogi prapya nivartate. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. Purport. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Muni mentions that those who are expert in fruitive activities and sacrificial methods on earth attain to the moon at death. These elevated souls live on the moon for about 10,000 years, by demigod calculations, and enjoy life by drinking soma rus. They eventually return to earth. This means that on the moon there are higher classes of living beings, though they may not be perceived by the gross senses. Text 26. Shukla krishne gati yete jagatak shasvate mate ekaya yachana vrittim anyaya vartate punaha. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back, but when one passes in darkness, he returns. Purport. The same description of departure and return is quoted by Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushan from the Chandogya Upanishad 5.10.3-5. Those who are fruitive laborers and philosophical speculators from time immemorial are constantly going and coming. Actually, they do not attain ultimate salvation, for they do not surrender to Krishna. Text 27. Naite sriti patajanan yogi muhyati kashchana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto mvavarjana. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Purport. Krishna is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in his service, and this will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. The word yoga yukta is especially significant in this verse. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Sri Rupa Goswami advises, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjata. One should be unattached in material affairs and do everything in Krishna consciousness. By this system, which is called yukta vairagya, one attains perfection. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions, because he knows that his passage to the supreme abode is guaranteed by devotional service. text 28. Vedishu yangyeshu tapaksachaiva daneshu yat punya palam pradishtam atyeti tatsavam idam viditnva yogi parang sthanam upaiti chadyam. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Purport. This verse is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living under his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order, and if the master neglects to call the student for food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for a period from 5 to 20 years, he may become a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmachari is allowed to enter into household life and marry. When he is a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance, as described in Bhagavad Gita. Then, after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of Vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in forests, dressing with tree bark, not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of brahmacharya, householder life, vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly kingdoms, and when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti or in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined by Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. The words idam viditva indicate that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first 6 and the last 6 chapters are like coverings for the middle 6 chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle 6 chapters, in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculations, etc., for one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning of the 4th chapter, it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and finally gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna, or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains the state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of attaining the Supreme. Chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge. Text 1. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Tute Guryatamam Pravakshyam Anusuyave Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yagngatva Moksha Seshubhat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." Purport. As a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, for it is realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this 9th chapter matters more confidential than any he has already disclosed. The very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, is more or less an introduction to the rest of the book. And in the 2nd and 3rd chapters, the spiritual knowledge described is called confidential. Topics discussed in the 7th and 8th chapters are specifically related to devotional service, and because they bring enlightenment in Krishna consciousness, they are called more confidential. But the matters which are described in the 9th chapter deal with unalloyed pure devotion. Therefore, this is called the most confidential. One who is situated in the most confidential knowledge of Krishna is naturally transcendental. He therefore has no material pangs, although he is in the material world. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said that although one who has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord is situated in the conditional state of material existence, he is to be considered liberated. Similarly, we shall find in the Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter that anyone who is engaged in that way is a liberated person. Now, this first verse has a specific significance. The words idam jnanam, this knowledge, refer to pure devotional service, which consists of 9 different activities: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. By the practice of these 9 elements of devotional service, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When one's heart is thus cleared of material contamination, one can understand this science of Krishna. Simply to understand that a living entity is not material is not sufficient. That may be the beginning of spiritual realization, but one should recognize the difference between activities of the body and the spiritual activities of one who understands that he is not the body. In the 7th chapter, we have already discussed the opulent potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different energies, the inferior and superior natures, and all this material manifestation. Now, in chapter 9, the glories of the Lord will be delineated. The Sanskrit word anasuyave in this verse is also very significant. Generally, the commentators, even if they are highly scholarly, are all envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the most erudite scholars write on Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they are envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. The commentaries given by devotees of the Lord are bona fide. No one can explain Bhagavad Gita or give perfect knowledge of Krishna if he is envious. One who criticizes the character of Krishna without knowing him is a fool. So such commentaries should be very carefully avoided. For one who understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pure and transcendental personality, these chapters will be very beneficial. Text 2. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Avyayam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. purport. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the King of Education because it is the essence of all doctrines and philosophies explained before. Among the principal philosophers in India are Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Yajnavalkya, Shandilya, and Vaishvanara. And finally, there is Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedanta Sutra. So there is no dearth of knowledge in the field of philosophy or transcendental knowledge. Now the Lord says that this ninth chapter is the king of all such knowledge, the essence of all knowledge that can be derived from the study of the Vedas and different kinds of philosophy. It is the most confidential because confidential or transcendental knowledge involves understanding the difference between the soul and the body. And the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in devotional service. Generally, people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering, etc. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and many huge universities, but there is, unfortunately, no university or educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. Yet the soul is the most important part of the body. Without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the vital soul. The Bhagavad Gita, especially from the second chapter on, stresses the importance of the soul. In the very beginning, the Lord says that this body is perishable and that the soul is not perishable. That is a confidential part of knowledge, simply knowing that the spirit soul is different from this body and that its nature is immutable, indestructible, and eternal. But that gives no positive information about the soul. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body and that when the body is finished or one is liberated from the body, the soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. But actually, that is not the fact. How can the soul, who is so active within this body, be inactive after being liberated from the body? It is always active. If it is eternal, then it is eternally active, and its activities in the spiritual kingdom are the most confidential part of spiritual knowledge. These activities of the spirit soul are therefore indicated here as constituting the king of all knowledge, the most confidential part of all knowledge. This knowledge is the purest form of all activities, as explained in Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, man's sinful activities have been analyzed and are shown to be the results of sin after sin. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities are entangled in different stages and forms of sinful reactions. For instance, when the seed of a particular tree is sown, the tree does not appear immediately to grow. It takes some time. It is first a small sprouting plant, then it assumes the form of a tree, then it flowers and bears fruit, and when it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who have sown the seed of the tree. Similarly, a man performs a sinful act, and like a seed, it takes time to fructify. There are different stages. The sinful action may have already stopped within the individual, but the results or the fruit of that sinful action are still to be experienced. There are sins which are still in the form of a seed, and there are others which are already fructified and are giving us fruit, which we are experiencing as distress and pain. As explained in the 28th verse of the 7th chapter, a person who has completely ended the reactions of all sinful activities and who is fully engaged in pious activities, being freed from the duality of this material world, becomes engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, those who are actually engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord are already freed from all reactions. This statement is confirmed in the Padma Purana. Aprarabdha palam papam kutam bijam palonmukam kramenaiva paliyeta vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. For those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified, in the stock, or in the form of a seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it is called Pavitram Uttamam, the purest. Uttama means transcendental. Tamas means this material world or darkness, and Uttama means that which is transcendental to material activities. Devotional activities are never to be considered material, although sometimes it appears that devotees are engaged just like ordinary men. One who can see and is familiar with devotional service will know that they are not material activities. They are all spiritual and devotional, uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is said that the execution of devotional service is so perfect that one can perceive the results directly. This direct result is actually perceived, and we have practical experience that any person who is chanting the holy names of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, in course of chanting without offenses, feels some transcendental pleasure and very quickly becomes purified of all material contamination. This is actually seen. Furthermore, if one engages not only in hearing but in trying to broadcast the message of devotional activities as well, or if he engages himself in helping the missionary activities of Krishna consciousness, he gradually feels spiritual progress. This advancement in spiritual life does not depend on any kind of previous education or qualification. The method itself is so pure that simply by engaging in it, one becomes pure. In the Vedanta Sutra 3.2.26, this is also described in the following words. Prakashascha karman yabhyasat. Devotional service is so potent that simply by engaging in the activities of devotional service, one becomes enlightened without a doubt. A practical example of this can be seen in the previous life of Narada, who in that life happened to be the son of a maidservant. He had no education, nor was he born into a high family. But when his mother was engaged in serving great devotees, Narada also became engaged, and sometimes, in the absence of his mother, he would serve the great devotees himself. Narada personally says, Uchishta lepan onamodito dvijai sakritsma bunje tadapasta kilbisha evam pravittasya vishuddha chetasas dandharma hevatma ruchi prajayate. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.25, Narada describes his previous life to his disciple Vyasadeva. He says that while engaged as a boy servant for those purified devotees during the 4 months of their stay, he was intimately associating with them. Sometimes those sages left remnants of food on their dishes, and the boy, who would wash their dishes, wanted to taste the remnants. So he asked the great devotees for their permission, and when they gave it, Narada ate those remnants and consequently became freed from all sinful reactions. As he went on eating, he gradually became as pure-hearted as the sages. The great devotees relished the taste of unceasing devotional service to the Lord by hearing and chanting, and Narada gradually developed the same taste. Narada says further, Tatranvaham Krishna kata pragayatam anugrahena shunavang manohara tashadnayame nupadam vashrinvata priyashavasyangamamabhavanuchi. By associating with the sages, Narada got the taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, and he developed a great desire for devotional service. Therefore, as described in the Vedanta Sutra, prakashascha karman yabhyasat. If one is engaged simply in the acts of devotional service, everything is revealed to him automatically, and he can understand. This is called pratyaksha, directly perceived. The word dharmyam means the path of religion. Narada was actually a son of a maidservant. He had no opportunity to go to school. He was simply assisting his mother, and fortunately, his mother rendered some service to the devotees. The child, Narada, also got the opportunity and simply by association achieved the highest goal of all religion. The highest goal of all religion is devotional service, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Religious people generally do not know that the highest perfection of religion is the attainment of devotional service. As we have already discussed in regard to the last verse of chapter 8, Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapaksu Chaiva, generally Vedic knowledge is required for self-realization. But here, although Narada never went to the school of the spiritual master and was not educated in the Vedic principles, he acquired the highest results of Vedic study. This process is so potent that even without performing the religious process regularly, one can be raised to the highest perfection. How is this possible? This is also explained in Vedic literature. Acharyavan Purusho Veda. One who is in association with great acharyas, even if he is not educated or has never studied the Vedas, can become familiar with all the knowledge necessary for realization. The process of devotional service is a very happy one, susukam. Why? Devotional service consists of shravanam kirtanam vishno, so one can simply hear the chanting of the glories of the Lord or can attend philosophical lectures on transcendental knowledge given by authorized acharyas. Simply by sitting, one can learn. Then one can eat the remnants of the food offered to God, nice palatable dishes. In every state, devotional service is joyful. One can execute devotional service even in the most poverty-stricken condition. The Lord says, Patram pushpam palam toyam. He is ready to accept from the devotee any kind of offering, never mind what. Even a leaf, a flower, a bit of fruit, or a little water, which are all available in every part of the world, can be offered by any person, regardless of social position, and will be accepted if offered with love. There are many instances in history. Simply by tasting the tulsi leaves offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, great sages like Sanat Kumara became great devotees. Therefore, the devotional process is very nice, and it can be executed in a happy mood. God accepts only the love with which things are offered to him. It is said here that this devotional service is eternally existing. It is not as the Mayavadi philosophers claim. Although they sometimes take to so-called devotional service, their idea is that as long as they are not liberated, they will continue their devotional service. But at the end, when they become liberated, they will become one with God. Such temporary, time-serving devotional service is not accepted as pure devotional service. Actual devotional service continues even after liberation. When the devotee goes to the spiritual planet in the kingdom of God, he is also engaged there in serving the Supreme Lord. He does not try to become one with the Supreme Lord. As will be seen in Bhagavad Gita, actual devotional service begins after liberation. After one is liberated, when one is situated in the Brahman position, Brahma Bhuta, one's devotional service begins. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. No one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, or any other yoga independently. By these yogic methods, one may make a little progress toward Bhakti Yoga. But without coming to the stage of devotional service, one cannot understand what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also confirmed that when one becomes purified by executing the process of devotional service, especially by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita from realized souls, then he can understand the science of Krishna or the science of God. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavan bhakti yogataha. When one's heart is cleared of all nonsense, then one can understand what God is. Thus the process of devotional service of Krishna consciousness is the king of all education and the king of all confidential knowledge. It is the purest form of religion, and it can be executed joyfully without difficulty. Therefore, one should adopt it. Text 3. Ashaddadana purushaha dharmasyasya parantapo aprapyamang nivartante mrityu sansara vartmani. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. Chapter 9, Text 3, Purport Continued. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.14, Yatattaro mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bhujo pashaka prano paharat chayatindriyanam tataiva savar hanamachuteja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Now, the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. In the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably, they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity that some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive, and as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first-class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti, or service to Krishna, is the best course, and so in good faith they have taken it up. Thus they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. And for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency toward karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed. But as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second-class or first-class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages and described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First-class attachment, second-class attachment, and third-class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Text 4. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadam yaktamurtina matstani sarva bhutani nachahante shavastitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. It is said, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabaved Grahyamindriyai Sevon Mukehi Jivado Swayameva Sporatyadaha. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. Lord Sri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. In the Brahma Samhita 5.38, it is stated, Premandana Charita Bhakti Velochanena Santaksadaya Viridhyesha Velokiyanti. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within himself and outside himself, if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude towards him. Thus, for people in general, he is not visible. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated here by the word of Yaktamurtina. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in the 7th chapter, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, so the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere, and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishtibhyaham idam kritsnam, he is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. Text 5. Natamatstani bhutani pashyame yogamaisharam bhuta brinnata bhutastho mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. Purport. The Lord says that everything is resting on him, matstani savabhutani. This should not be misunderstood. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material manifestation. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulders. He seems to be very tired holding this great earthly planet. Such an image should not be entertained in connection with Krishna's upholding this created universe. He says that although everything is resting on him, he is aloof. The planetary systems are floating in space, and this space is the energy of the Supreme Lord. But he is different from space. He is differently situated. Therefore, the Lord says, although they are situated on my inconceivable energy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I am aloof from them. This is the inconceivable opulence of the Lord. In the Nirukti Vedic Dictionary, it is said, Yujyate nena durgateshu karyeshu. The Supreme Lord is performing inconceivably wonderful pastimes, displaying his energy. His person is full of different potent energies, and his determination is itself actual fact. In this way, the personality of Godhead is to be understood. We may think of doing something, but there are so many impediments, and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. The Lord explains this fact. Although he is the maintainer and sustainer of the entire material manifestation, he does not touch this material manifestation. Simply by his supreme will, everything is created, everything is sustained, everything is maintained, and everything is annihilated. There is no difference between his mind and himself, as there is a difference between ourselves and our present material mind, because he is absolute spirit. Simultaneously, the Lord is present in everything, yet the common man cannot understand how he is also present personally. He is different from this material manifestation, yet everything is resting on him. This is explained here as Yogam Aishwaram, the mystic power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 6.
Yata kashastito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani matstani chubadaraya.
Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, so all created beings rest in me. Purport. For the ordinary person, it is almost inconceivable how the huge material creation is resting in him. But the Lord is giving an example which may help us to understand. The sky may be the biggest manifestation we can conceive. And in that sky, the wind or air is the biggest manifestation in the cosmic world. The movement of the air influences the movements of everything. But although the wind is great, it is still situated within the sky. The wind is not beyond the sky. Similarly, all the wonderful cosmic manifestations are existing by the supreme will of God, and all of them are subordinate to that supreme will. As we generally say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, everything is moving under His will. By His will, everything is being created, everything is being maintained, and everything is being annihilated. Still, He is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind. In the Upanishads, it is stated, Yadan Bisha Vatak Pavati. It is out of the fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind is blowing. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8.1. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8.9, it is stated, Etasya va aksharasya prashasane gargi surya chandramaso vindrato tishtata etasya va akarasya prashasane gargi dhyav apratimyo vindrato tishtata. By the supreme order, under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the moon, the sun, and the other great planets are moving. In the Brahma Samhita 5.52, also it is stated, Yakchakshadesha sabitasakalakrahanam rajasamastasudamutadasheshateja yasya gaya brahmati samvritakala chakro govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. This is a description of the movement of the sun. It is said that the sun is considered to be one of the eyes of the Supreme Lord, and that it has immense potency to diffuse heat and light. Still, it is moving in its prescribed orbit by the order and the supreme will of Govinda. So, from the Vedic literature, we can find evidence that this material manifestation, which appears to us to be very wonderful and great, is under the complete control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This will be further explained in the later verses of this chapter. Text 7. Sarva bhutani kunteya prakatim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpado visvajamyaham. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. Purport. The creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material cosmic manifestation are completely dependent on the supreme will of the Personality of Godhead. At the end of the millennium means at the death of Brahma. Brahma lives for 100 years, and his one day is calculated at 4,300,000,000 of our earthly years. His night is of the same duration. His month consists of 30 such days and nights, and his year of 12 months. After 100 such years, when Brahma dies, the devastation or annihilation takes place. This means that the energy manifested by the Supreme Lord is again wound up in himself. Then again, when there is a need to manifest the cosmic world, it is done by his will. Bahusyam. Although I am one, I shall become many. This is the Vedic aphorism, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. He expands himself in this material energy, and the whole cosmic manifestation again takes place. Text 8. Apakatin samavastamya visvajami punakpuna bhuta gramam imankritsnam avasham prakate vishat. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will it is annihilated at the end. Purport. This material world is the manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This has already been explained several times. At the creation, the material energy is let loose as the Mahatattva, into which the Lord, as his first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, enters. He lies within the causal ocean and breathes out innumerable universes, and into each universe the Lord again enters as Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Each universe is in that way created. He still further manifests himself as Chirodakshai Vishnu, and that Vishnu enters into everything, even into the minute atom. This fact is explained here. He enters into everything. Now, as far as the living entities are concerned, they are impregnated into this material nature, and as a result of their past deeds, they take different positions. Thus, the activities of this material world begin. The activities of the different species of living beings are begun from the very moment of the creation. It is not that all is evolved. The different species of life are created immediately along with the universe. Men, animals, beasts, birds, everything is simultaneously created, because whatever desires the living entities had at the last annihilation are again manifested. It is clearly indicated here by the word avasham that the living entities have nothing to do with this process. The state of being in their past life, in the past creation, is simply manifested again, and all this is done simply by His will. This is the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of God. And after creating different species of life, He has no connection with them. The creation takes place to accommodate the inclinations of the various living entities, and so the Lord does not become involved with it. Text 9. Nachamang tan nikarmanihi nibadhanti dhananjaya udasin navadasinam asaktang teshu karmasu. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Purport. One should not think, in this connection, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no engagement. In his spiritual world, he is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita 5.6, it is stated, Atma ramasya tasyasti prakrityana samagamaha. He is always involved in his eternal, blissful, spiritual activities, but he has nothing to do with these material activities. Material activities are being carried on by his different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here with the word udasinavat. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged, someone is being put into jail, someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth. But still, he is neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.134, it is stated, Vaishamya Nayagrinyena. He is not situated in the dualities of this material world. He is transcendental to these dualities, nor is he attached to the creation and annihilation of this material world. The living entities take their different forms in the various species of life according to their past deeds, and the Lord doesn't interfere with them. Text 10. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagan viparivartate. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Purport. It is clearly stated here that the Supreme Lord, although aloof from all the activities of the material world, remains the Supreme Director. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Will and the background of this material manifestation. But the management is being conducted by material nature. Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita that of all of the living entities in different forms and species, I am the Father. The father gives seeds to the womb of the mother for the child. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, by his mere glance, injects all the living entities into the womb of material nature, and they come out in their different forms and species according to their last desires and activities. All these living entities, although born under the glance of the Supreme Lord, take their different bodies according to their past deeds and desires. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over material nature. Material nature is thus activated, and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, he has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature, without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. Text 11. Avajanam de mamudha manushim tanam ashritam param bhavam ajananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. Purport. From the other explanations of the previous verses in this chapter, it is clear that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing like a human being, is not a common man. The Personality of Godhead, who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the complete cosmic manifestation, cannot be a human being. Yet there are many foolish men who consider Krishna to be merely a powerful man and nothing more. Actually, he is the original Supreme Personality, as is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Ishwarak Parama Krishna. He is the Supreme Lord. There are many Ishwaras, controllers, and one appears greater than another. In the ordinary management of affairs in the material world, we find some official or director, and above him there is a secretary, and above him a minister, and above him a president. Each of them is a controller, but one is controlled by another. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that Krishna is the supreme controller. There are many controllers undoubtedly, both in the material and spiritual world, but Krishna is the supreme controller, Ishwarak Parama Krishna, and his body is Satchidananda, non-material. Material bodies cannot perform the wonderful acts described in previous verses. The Lord's body is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. Although he is not a common man, the foolish deride him and consider him to be a man. His body is called here Manushim because he is acting just like a man, a friend of Arjuna's, a politician involved in the battle of Kurukshetra. In so many ways, he is acting just like an ordinary man, but actually his body is Satchidananda Vigraha, eternal bliss and knowledge absolute. This is confirmed in the Vedic language also. Satchidananda Rupaya Krishnaya. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is the eternal blissful form of knowledge. Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1.1. There are other descriptions in the Vedic language also. Tamekam Govindam. You are Govinda, the pleasure of the senses and the cows. Satchidananda Vigraham. And your form is transcendental, full of knowledge, bliss, and eternality. Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1.35. Despite the transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna's body, its full bliss and knowledge, there are many so-called scholars and commentators of Bhagavad Gita who deride Krishna as an ordinary man. The scholar may be born an extraordinary man due to his previous good work, but this conception of Sri Krishna is due to a poor fund of knowledge. Therefore he is called Mudha, for only foolish persons consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being. The foolish consider Krishna an ordinary human being because they do not know the confidential activities of the Supreme Lord and his different energies. They do not know that Krishna's body is a symbol of complete knowledge and bliss, that he is the proprietor of everything that be, and that he can award liberation to anyone. Because they do not know that Krishna has so many transcendental qualifications, they deride him. Nor do they know that the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the material world is a manifestation of His internal energy. He is the master of the material energy. As has been explained in several places, Mama Maya Dodotteya, he claims that the material energy, although very powerful, is under his control, and whoever surrenders unto him can get out of the control of this material energy. If a soul surrendered to Krishna can get out of the influence of material energy, then how can the Supreme Lord, who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the whole cosmic nature, have a material body like us? So this conception of Krishna is complete foolishness. Foolish persons, however, cannot conceive that the personality of Godhead, Krishna, appearing just like an ordinary man, can be the controller of all the atoms and of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The biggest and the minutest are beyond their conception, so they cannot imagine that a form like that of a human being can simultaneously control the infinite and the minute. Actually, although he is controlling the infinite and the finite, he is apart from all this manifestation. It is clearly stated concerning his Yogam Aishwaram, his inconceivable transcendental energy, that he can control the infinite and the finite simultaneously, and that he can remain aloof from them. Although the foolish cannot imagine how Krishna, who appears just like a human being, can control the infinite and the finite, those who are pure devotees accept this, for they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they completely surrender unto him and engage in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. There are many controversies between the impersonalists and the personalists about the Lord's appearance as a human being. But if we consult Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the authoritative texts for understanding the science of Krishna, then we can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not an ordinary man, although he appeared on this earth as an ordinary human. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, when the sages headed by Shonaka inquired about the activities of Krishna, they said, Kṛtavān kila karmāni saharāmena keshava atimartyāne bhagavān gūḍha kapata-mānuṣa. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. Bhagavatam 1.1.20. The Lord's appearance as a man bewilders the foolish. No human being could perform the wonderful acts that Krishna performed while he was present on this earth. When Krishna appeared before his father and mother, Vasudeva and Devaki, he appeared with four hands, but after the prayers of his parents, he transformed himself into an ordinary child. As stated in the Bhagavatam 10.3.46, Babuva Prakata Shishu, he became just like an ordinary child, an ordinary human being. Now, here again it is indicated that the Lord's appearance as an ordinary human being is one of the features of his transcendental body. In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita also it is stated that Arjuna prayed to see Krishna's form of four hands, tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena. After revealing this form, Krishna, when petitioned by Arjuna, again assumed his original human-like form, manusham rupam. These different features of the Supreme Lord are certainly not those of an ordinary human being. Some of those who deride Krishna and who are infected with the Mayavadi philosophy quote the following verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.29.21 to prove that Krishna is just an ordinary man. Aham sarveshu bhuteshu bhutatma vastita sada. The Supreme is present in every living entity. We should better take note of this particular verse from the Vaishnava Acharyas like Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instead of following the interpretation of unauthorized persons who deride Krishna. Jiva Goswami, commenting on this verse, says that Krishna, in his plenary expansion as Paramatma, is situated in the moving and the non-moving entities as the Supersoul. So any neophyte devotee who simply gives his attention to the Archamurti, the form of the Supreme Lord in the temple, and does not respect other living entities, is uselessly worshipping the form of the Lord in the temple. There are three kinds of devotees of the Lord, and the neophyte is in the lowest stage. The neophyte devotee gives more attention to the deity in the temple than to other devotees. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur warns that this sort of mentality should be corrected. A devotee should see that because Krishna is present in everyone's heart as Paramatma, every body is the embodiment or the temple of the Supreme Lord. So as one offers respect to the temple of the Lord, he should similarly properly respect each and every body in which the Paramatma dwells. Everyone should therefore be given proper respect and should not be neglected. There are also many impersonalists who deride temple worship. They say that since God is everywhere, why should one restrict himself to temple worship? But if God is everywhere, is he not in the temple or in the deity? Although the personalist and the impersonalist will fight with one another perpetually, a perfect devotee in Krishna consciousness knows that although Krishna is the Supreme Personality, he is all-pervading, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. Although his personal abode is Goloka Vrindavan, and he is always staying there, by his different manifestations of energy and by his plenary expansion, he is present everywhere in all parts of the material and spiritual creation. Text 12. Moghasha mogha karmano mogha jnana vichetasah rakshasi masarin jaiva bhakatim mohinin shuta. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Purport. There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service, going back to Godhead, will never be tasted. Similarly, those who are engaged in fruitive pious activities and who are ultimately hoping to be liberated from this material entanglement will never be successful either, because they deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demonic or atheistic. As described in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, such demonic miscreants never surrender to Krishna. Therefore, their mental speculations to arrive at the absolute truth bring them to the false conclusion that the ordinary living entity and Krishna are one and the same. With such a foolish conviction, they think that the body of any human being is now simply covered by material nature, and that as soon as one is liberated from this material body, there is no difference between God and himself. This attempt to become one with Krishna will be baffled because of delusion. Such atheistic and demoniac cultivation of spiritual knowledge is always futile. That is the indication of this verse. For such persons, cultivation of the knowledge in the Vedic literature, like the Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads, is always baffled. It is a great offense, therefore, to consider Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be an ordinary man. Those who do so are certainly deluded because they cannot understand the eternal form of Krishna. The Brihad Vishnu Smriti clearly states, Yo veti bhautikam deham krishnasya padamatmano sasavasman bahiskarya shautasmata vidhanatah mukum tasyava lokyapi sachelam snanamacharit. One who considers the body of Krishna to be material should be driven out from all rituals and activities of the Shruti and the Smriti. And if one by chance sees his face, one should at once take a bath in the Ganges to rid himself of infection. People jeer at Krishna because they are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their destiny is certainly to take birth after birth in the species of atheistic and demoniac life. Perpetually, their real knowledge will remain under delusion, and gradually they will regress to the darkest region of creation. Text 13. Mahatmanastu mam parta daivim prakritimashrita pajantyananda manaso gyatva bhutarim avyayam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Purport. In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated in the divine nature. He is not under the control of material nature. And how is this effected? That is explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, or great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna in Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. Text 14. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrata namasyantastam bhaktya nityayukta upasati. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Purport. The Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He is always engaged in the glorification of the Lord. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising his holy name, his eternal form, his transcendental qualities, and his uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Brahma-jyoti, is not described as Mahatma in the Bhagavad Gita. He is described in a different way in the next verse. The Mahatma is always engaged in different activities of devotional service, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting about Vishnu, not a demigod or human being. That is devotion, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, and Smaranam, remembering him. Such a Mahatma has firm determination to achieve at the ultimate end the association of the Supreme Lord in any one of the five transcendental rasas. To achieve that success, he engages all activities, mental, bodily, and vocal, everything, in the service of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. That is called full Krishna consciousness. In devotional service, there are certain activities which are called determined, such as fasting on certain days, like the 11th day of the moon, Ekadashi, and on the appearance day of the Lord. All these rules and regulations are offered by the great acharyas for those who are actually interested in getting admission into the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world. The Mahatmas, great souls, strictly observe all these rules and regulations, and therefore they are sure to achieve the desired result. As described in the second verse of this chapter, not only is this devotional service easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One does not need to undergo any severe penance and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service, guided by an expert spiritual master, and in any position, either as a householder or a sannyasi or a brahmachari. In any position and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become actually Mahatma, a great soul. Text 15. Jnana yajnana chapyanni yajanto mam upasati ekatvena pitakvena bahudha vishvato mukham. Others, who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge, worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. Purport. This verse is the summary of the previous verses. The Lord tells Arjuna that those who are purely in Krishna consciousness and do not know anything other than Krishna are called Mahatma. Yet there are other persons who are not exactly in the position of Mahatma, but who worship Krishna also in different ways. Some of them have already been described as the distressed, the financially destitute, the inquisitive, and those who are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. But there are others who are still lower, and these are divided into three. 1. He who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. 2. He who concocts some form of the Lord and worships that. And 3. He who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarupa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and worships that. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as the Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monists, are most predominant. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality they worship themselves. This is also a type of God worship, for they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spiritual soul. At least, such a sense is prominent. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. The second class includes the worshippers of the demigods, those who by imagination consider any form to be the form of the Supreme Lord. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worship that. The universe is also a form of the Lord. Text 16.
Aham katudaham yagya svadaham aham aushadam mantroham aham evajyam aham agnir aham hutam.
But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. Purport. The Vedic sacrifice known as Jyotishtoma is also Krishna, and he is also the Mahayagya mentioned in the Smriti. The oblations offered to the Pitraloka, or the sacrifice performed to please the Pitraloka, considered as a kind of drug in the form of clarified butter, is also Krishna. The mantras chanted in this connection are also Krishna. And many other commodities made with milk products for offering in the sacrifices are also Krishna. The fire is also Krishna because fire is one of the five material elements and is therefore claimed as the separated energy of Krishna. In other words, the Vedic sacrifices recommended in the Karma Kanda division of the Vedas are in total also Krishna. Or, in other words, those who are engaged in rendering devotional service unto Krishna are to be understood to have performed all the sacrifices recommended in the Vedas.
Text 17. Pitaham asya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vejam pavitram omkara riksama yajurevacha.
I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajurvedas. Purport. The entire cosmic manifestations, moving and non-moving, are manifested by different activities of Krishna's energy. In the material existence, we create different relationships with different living entities who are nothing but Krishna's marginal energy. Under the creation of Prakriti, some of them appear as our father, mother, grandfather, creator, etc. But actually, they are parts and parcels of Krishna. As such, these living entities who appear to be our father, mother, etc., are nothing but Krishna. In this verse, the word dhata means creator. Not only are our father and mother parts and parcels of Krishna, but the creator, grandmother and grandfather, etc., are also Krishna. Actually, any living entity, being part and parcel of Krishna, is Krishna. All the Vedas, therefore, aim only toward Krishna. Whatever we want to know through the Vedas is but a progressive step toward understanding Krishna. That subject matter which helps us purify our constitutional position is especially Krishna. Similarly, the living entity who is inquisitive to understand all Vedic principles is also part and parcel of Krishna, and as such is also Krishna. In all the Vedic mantras, the word Om, called pranava, is a transcendental sound vibration and is also Krishna. And because in all the hymns of the four Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva, the pranava or Omkar is very prominent, it is understood to be Krishna.
Text 18. Gatir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasak Shadanang Surit Bhavavak pralayak sthanam nidanam bijam avyayam.
I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed.